Hey, welcome to Change Starts Here, Research Conversations. I am Kim Yaris, and I am here with my friend and colleague, Jennifer Chevalier. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Kim.
All right. So throughout the season, we have been exploring this thing that we call systemic synergy, which for those of you who might just be joining us for the first time, is intentionally designing systems to create synergy across departments, roles, levels, locations, and schedules, with the goal being to build a culture where everyone is empowered to apply their talents and knowledge effectively. So today we are going to talk about something absolutely foundational to systemic synergy. Establishing foundations of trust. Ready to get started, Jennifer?
I am. Let's do it.
All right. So in thinking about trust, we got to thinking about how it shows up in schools and found ourselves reflecting back on our own experiences about what this looks like. So for me, one of the most vivid memories came when I thought about an elementary school that I once visited in Canada. So when it was time for students to go to their special or to lunch, the teacher would just simply say to the students, "All right, it's that time. You can head off now." When I saw this, I was like, "What is happening?" Right? Because then the kids all got up, they gathered what they needed and headed out the door and walked themselves to wherever they needed to go. Like, this just totally messed with my United States oriented brain, because when I thought about what would happen next, I imagined chaos, right? Elementary students walking themselves through the hall. But it wasn't. The students were like incredibly well behaved. It was just in that moment a powerful example of what a high trust culture looks like. And I have never forgotten it.
Wow, that does seem like a departure from what we experience in elementary schools here in the US, at least the ones I've been in. And that also sounds different from something I experienced at a high school in the US. This moment has stuck with me for years. Back when I was an instructional coach, I was supporting a high school teacher. A student that I knew personally, she was a former student of mine that was now in high school. I know, hard to believe I'm old enough for that, but it's true.
I know, right?
So the student that I knew, and I knew her to be extremely responsible, she returned to this classroom where I was coaching after seeing her guidance counselor. And the student had misplaced the like hall pass on the way back to the classroom after seeing the guidance counselor. And so the classroom teacher didn't believe that the student had really been at the guidance counselor, and even like demanded, like, "Tell me where you have really been." And I was like, "What?" So the student just kind of politely explained again that she had been to the guidance counselor and that she lost the pass on the way back. But the teacher just would not accept that as an answer. And so the student got sent to the dean's office because, as the teacher said, "I just don't have time for this." And the student just left the room like scarlet cheeked and fighting back tears. I think she was just completely humiliated. So,
So these two stories feel like they couldn't be more different. And contrast, such a powerful teacher. It helps us to see the ways in which trust can be connected to empowerment, the Canadian school example, and disempowerment, the example that you provided, right? So I know in that Canadian school that I was visiting, those students felt like the teachers believed in them, which when somebody believes in you, like, you want to rise to meet the occasion, right? That is empowering. Whereas that high school student, I mean, I could imagine if I were her, I would be hard pressed to want to take risks in a place that feels so psychologically unsafe. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like a real withdrawal of trust.
Definitely.
Yeah. So when trust exists in a school, people, from principals to teachers to students, you know, that's where the courage to take risks, to believe in our ideas, to share them with others, that's where it's rooted, right? But if we have these low trust environments, there's a tendency to be fearful, you know, fearful of consequences or fearful of retribution. And I think that whenever fear dominates, people are less likely to share, contribute, be a part of the community as a whole. So it's like, I see this kind of as like a metaphor in my mind. I imagine being in a room, and in the room, there's like this big, giant boulder. And it's like this unscalable obstacle. Like there's just no possibility of getting around it when it's low trust, which when we're thinking about innovation or imagining what is possible or helping people rise to meet their greatest potential, that boulder is insurmountable. And then so therefore not possible.
Wow, that's a big idea you just shared there, Kim. And, you know, if we start to think about why does trust matter and how does it impact organizations, like I can't help but pick up The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey, because this book really shaped my thinking around trust. And I just want to answer the questions, why does trust matter and how does it impact organizations, from a quote from this book. So it's right on the first page, and it says, "There is one thing that is common to every individual, relationship, team, family, organization, nation, economy, and civilization throughout the world. One thing which, if removed, will destroy the most powerful government, the most successful business, the most thriving economy, the most influential leadership, the greatest friendship, the strongest character, the deepest love. On the other hand, if developed and leveraged, that one thing has the potential to create unparalleled success and prosperity in every dimension of life. Yet, it is the least understood, most neglected, and most underestimated possibility of our time. That one thing is trust."
Oh my gosh.
So, does it matter? Does it impact people and organizations? Absolutely. And in this book, Stephen M. R. Covey talks about two different components, trust taxes and trust dividends, which I find such a tangible way to think about trust. So low trust taxes relate to how low trust levels can really lead to increased costs and slower speeds in an organization. So when the trust isn't there, things move slower because, you know, people are being cautious and trying to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, we have to think about high trust and those high trust dividends. And so what are those? Well, they're related to the positive benefits that and the increased efficiency an organization experiences where there's a high level of trust among its members. So as a leader, like, I just urge you to look around you. Are projects moving quickly and successfully, or do they keep getting bogged down? Are people pretty quiet in meetings and just quick to agree with whatever you or another leader suggests? Or is everybody contributing and sharing ideas and giving opposing opinions about how our project should go? I mean, I would say if nobody's pushing back against ideas or offering counter types, then we're probably leading in a low trust organization, right? Mm-hmm. So what does a high trust organization look like? I would say at its best, and again, this is from The Speed of Trust, world-class trust in an organization results in high collaboration and partnering, effortless communication, because everyone's just transparent and direct, positive relationships with employees and all stakeholders, fully aligned systems and structures to support this high trust environment. And then all of this results in like a strong level of innovation and engagement, confidence, and even loyalty to the organization. So I feel like when we put all these things together, it sounds a lot like systemic synergy, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. You were saying all of that, and I'm like, hello, this is the very definition of systemic synergy.
Absolutely. And so, you know, if we're aiming for that systemic synergy where everyone is empowered to lead and contribute in a high level of synergy, then trust is critical. Trust makes the work go fast, whereas mistrust makes the work go slow.
Wow. So as you're saying that, my brain was going, you know, back to some of my own work experiences. And I was remembering how there was one situation that I was in where I used to joke that I shared a brain with a colleague of mine because it was so high trust, right? We did a lot of writing together, and I could take an idea and run with it, and vice versa. She could take an idea and run with it. There was no ego, just trust that together we were going to create great content. Whereas I had another working relationship that was very different. You know, it was a highly critical relationship, and I needed to get the other person's approval before I would run with an idea. And it really like slowed things down. I feel like our work could have been better, and we could have been far more prolific had there just been more trust in that relationship. Which, you know, that then leads me to thinking about creating high trust cultures, right? And if I were to answer the question of how do we do this, or what is the barrier to this, I guess the first step in how is understand what could block it. And when I think about what one of the biggest blocks, not the only one, but one of the biggest is ego, right? So when I reflect back on what was driving what was successful and what was not successful, I feel like ego plays a big role in it. Ego is what drives a person's need to control. And it can create like these imbalances in control, which automatically creates an environment where people may feel undervalued or unheard, or even worse, like a bit threatened, right? So when ego dominates, it creates walls rather than bridges, and it just gets in the way of authentic connections and our shared sense of purpose. And, you know, that's just not a very good foundation for cultivating trust. So that said, Jen, what do you think? What do you think schools can do to cultivate high trust cultures? Because that's basically not what we want. So how do we get there? What do we do to get what we do want?
Honestly, I think it starts with district and school leadership. I think as leaders, we must exhibit high trust behaviors. And, you know, that really starts with making sure our self-trust is intact. Like, are we credible leaders who demonstrate integrity and consistently declare our intent and are known for being capable? Do we have a track record of proven results? Like, you can be a really nice leader, but if you're not able to get the results, that only can get you so far in the realm of trust. So it's absolutely where it must begin here with the leaders. And we really need to look within and shore up our self-trust first. And then I think once we feel like we've gotten that in place, then we've got to look to relationship trust. So are we demonstrating consistent behavior based on high trust to build trust with others? And like, are we authentic and trustworthy in our relationships? And when we are, those relationships come easily. But I found, and I've had times in my life and my career where, like, I've noticed relationships are coming hard for me. Mm-hmm. And so as a leader, if that's true, if like relationships seem like a struggle, then do what I did. I had to step back and look at my behavior. You know, was I consistently demonstrating high trust behavior? So you could ask yourself that same question. And there are actually 13 high trust behaviors in The Speed of Trust. So if you want to know about more about those, you can definitely pick up the book. So once we get those first two layers in place, our self-trust and the relationship trust, then we have to shift into organizational trust, which is where we establish that whole culture of trust. So like, what systems and structures do we have in place, and what do they convey? Do they convey trust or mistrust? An example that comes to mind every time when I think about trust and systems is a district that I used to work at. A new leader came in and decided that there should be time clocks in the front office and in the back of each school site, and teachers had to punch in when they got to work and punch out when they left. And installing those time clocks sent this silent message to the teachers: we don't trust you. We don't see you as professionals who are trustworthy and capable of managing your time effectively. And I would just want to say, like, teachers are the hardest working people I know.
No doubt.
Right? I mean, they work well beyond the hours they are compensated for. Mm-hmm. They generally come in early or stay late or both. And a lot of times they're taking work home because they aren't given sufficient paid time to do everything that they need to do. Mm-hmm. So in that setting, those time clocks cause the teachers to feel a high level of resentment and mistrust of district leadership, who is now seen as being like micromanaging and not honoring their professionalism. And so what I started to hear teachers were thinking and saying, well, if you're going to make me use a clock to time in, clock in and out, then you know what? I'm going to leave immediately upon the end of my contracted time, and I'm not taking my work home with me. So installing those time clocks was like profoundly counterproductive on every level. So anyway, I would argue that the level of trust in an organization directly stems from leadership. And so as leaders, we have to align our character, our behavior, our systems and structures so they collectively convey the extension of trust to our people. And if we see people in our organization are generally pointing fingers or taking measures to protect themselves, like putting everything in writing, then I think we need to step back and evaluate our organization's culture, starting with our own self-trust, then the relationship trust, because those are the foundations of organizational trust.
Yeah, so definitely it starts with leadership. Right. So within the whole hierarchy, you know, the leadership being at the top, and it's going to filter down to the staff, the faculty. But I think too, teachers have a responsibility to building trust within their classrooms too, so that students feel safe and empowered and feel that same trust. You had said you were speaking about actions that convey trust and mistrust. And I think that there's certainly these practices find their way into classrooms also, right? So, you know, I've been in classrooms where there's a long list of rules that begin with don't, you know, don't touch person next to you, or don't call out answers, don't come to class unprepared. Or maybe it's not just a list of rules, but even that's the language that the teacher is using all of the time. And similar to like the time cards that you were talking about, Jennifer, what does that inadvertently convey? It says, I don't trust you, right? And if the goal for what we're trying to achieve is for everybody to feel empowered to reach their highest and best potential, if I'm feeling like you don't trust me, I'm not going to be taking risks. I'm not going to be thinking critically, you know. So there are things that we can do instead, right? And that, so when we're using don't all the time, what I think we're doing is focusing on weaknesses, and rather, you know, what we could do instead is look for strengths, you know, like, wow, you're so prepared for class today, or that was such a kind thing to say to your friend. So we can just as easily look for what students are doing well and right and comment on that as we look for their things that they're not. And when we do that, then it's just a totally different environment. And, you know, it's just so much more empowering. So we have put together a really great resource for you that you can download just to help you to think about a strength-based classroom approach. And we'll put that in the show notes for you. Gosh, it's almost, we're almost out of time. Such an important conversation.
I love that connection down to the classroom level because, you know, here at Franklin Covey, we believe everyone can be a leader. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these are skills for everyone to develop, from the student to the teacher to leadership of schools and districts. So that was a great way to bring it down to a different level, Kim. Thanks for doing that. We want to thank all of you for joining us for this episode of Change Starts Here Research Conversations. And we hope you'll join us next time. If you haven't already, make sure to like and subscribe so that you're aware of when the next episode drops. Thanks so much.
Bye, everybody.